Dollars going from 49.1 to 62.6, but oddly, average daily solar flux was down slightly from 105.3 to 103.5. Taking a longer view, solar activity is stronger than it was a year ago when average daily sunspot numbers were around 34.7 and the average solar flux was 86.9. So taking a look at the predicted solar flux for the next few days, it'll be 130 on July 9th through the 11th, then 120, 125, 110, and 108 on July 12th through the 15th, then 110, 100, 95, and 90.
Station on the ground reporting. News, Ozzie Harper. Yeah! Here I am, your main man, reporting from Jam Jam. On 16,000 kilocycles FM, and 1,000 megahertz on the ground. Yeah!
This is WGXC Acra, 90.7 on your dial. Also online at wavefarm.org/WGFC.
Monday, July 11th. Tune in all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Jump on the Afrosonic Taxi at 10 a.m. with music from Orchestra Makassi, the Wabiri Band, and Shahabi Ahmed, among others. At 11 a.m., Brandon Donegan is playing favorites with Augusto Pablo on his Playing Favorites show live from the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. At noon after the local news, tune in the Deep Three show with music from Maya Hersey, Ruki Sakamoto, and Rachel Miller, among others. 2 p.m. it's time for the Vital Weekly show with brand new music from around the world, including tracks this week from Susanna Lopez, Andrea Belushi, and Bonnie Jones. Go auctioneering on an audio buffet at 3 p.m. and then head to Housatonic in Western Mass for the WGXC afternoon show at 4 p.m. with Kieran Riley. At 10 p.m., it's time for Driftless Turmoil with music this week from The Breeder, Stereo Lab, and Connie Kissel on 90.7 FM WGXC. You can find all about the Hudson-based circus, the Bindlesif Family Circus, on the WGXC community calendar. They're hosting the Bindlesif Circus's Summer of Joy 2022 in Hudson with 5 different programs for youth ages 6 through young adults, including circus art intensives for youth and participation in the Hudson Black Arts and Cultural Festival Parade. Also work on costume design and fabrication. They host the Hudson Juggling Club at Waterfront Wednesdays in Hudson, and a restorative justice facilitation training with the Hudson Youth Center and the Restorative Center of Newburgh. These programs run from June 29th to August 24th. You can find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Alesia, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM, listener-aided and abetted radio.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom, WGXC.org, for more information about any of these stories. Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that a recent study of the condition of federally funded local roads from the Office of New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli ranked Greene County as second worst in the state. Discounting the state report based on its limited scope, Greene County Administrator Sean Grodin dismissed the reporting, saying its contents are useless. Quote, "This doesn't frighten me at all," unquote, Grodin said. Quote, "This is worthless data as far as I'm concerned," unquote. The report found the condition of federally funded local roads in Greene County to be fair, better only than Sullivan, the lowest-ranked county in the state. Federally funded roads in Columbia County were classified as good in the report. The road report was released in January and based on data from 2019 and 2020 collected by the state. Federally funded roads in the county include County Route 12 in Windham, Route 23B, and Route 24. The report lists the condition of federally funded roads in the towns of Hunter and Windham as poor, roads in Cairo and portions of Athens fair, while road conditions in Catskill and Coxsackie are good. According to the report, the 67 lane miles of locally owned roads eligible for federal funding in Greene County represent 3.6% of local lane miles in the county. Quote, "That means this report is worthless," unquote, Grodin said. Quote, "We have only four roads that are federally funded that this analysis is looking at. So what's the value of the report? The county owns 263 miles of county roads," unquote. The county uses a grading system to classify the quality of its roads in order to prioritize the roads that need work immediately, Grodin said. Quote, "County Route 12 is almost brand new," unquote, Grodin said, not denying that other federal local roads are lacking. Quote, "We just had the expansion where we added the sidewalk and the bike lane to it," unquote. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com. The Upstater.com reports that 2022 is the Lafarge-Ravenna cement plant's 60th year of operation. Ground was broken by the Atlantic Cement Company in 1961, and the facility, now owned by the Swiss multinational company Holcim, currently employs 160 full-time workers, making it the largest employer in southern Albany County, according to the company. However, while the company claims to have a vital role in supporting local community and good neighbor status, its 60-year presence in the region has not been without controversy. In 2014, the company was fined $100,000 by the State Department of Environmental Conservation for 50 violations of federal water pollution rules after it released 1,500 gallons of sulfuric acid into a stream that feeds the Hudson River. For decades, Holcim and Lafarge were listed among the state's top polluters by the Environmental Protection Agency. And in 2020, the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission took legal action in federal court alleging a Lafarge contractor fostered a racist work environment at the Ravenna plant during the facility's three-year modernization project. Republican Assemblymember Chris Tague, who represents the 102nd Assembly District, credits the company for its contributions to the local economy and how it has driven growth and employment in the area. Lafarge is part of Holcim U.S., which offers a range of cement, aggregates, asphalt, concrete products, and construction services. Read more at this at theupstater.com. Jillian Scott reports for the Times Union that Amtrak has abruptly canceled bike reservations on its Maple Leaf line, leaving some travelers scrambling to salvage their plans. Since July 1st, passengers on the Maple line, or trains 63 and 64, are no longer able to reserve spots for bicycles, and all existing reservations for bicycles on those trains were also canceled. The Maple Leaf line runs from New York to Albany to Toronto, and it offers a key transportation option for cyclists looking to ride the 360 miles of the Empire State Trail between Buffalo and Albany. Cyclists take the train in one direction and then ride back to their starting point. Cyclists now have to find a shuttle service to take their bikes to Buffalo and rent a car or cancel their trips altogether. Jason Abrams, an Amtrak public relations manager, said the cancellations were caused by a need to change the train used for the line. The new train does not have bike racks. Passengers can try to book space on the Empire line instead, which also offers travel between Albany and Buffalo, but there are limited spots for bicycles. Folding bikes are still allowed as carry-on luggage. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
The Atlantic hurricane season typically runs from June to October, and environmental groups are urging Congress to advance a bill that would require the federal government to implement a national climate adaptation and resilience strategy. It would also create a position for a chief resilience officer, which some state and local governments already have, to coordinate responses to intense weather events and develop approaches to combating climate change. U.S. Senator Chris Coons of Delaware is the bill's primary sponsor. He says states are doing this work already and need backup.
The steadily increasing intensity and severity of wildfires and tornadoes, of hurricanes and storm surges have an impact on all of our communities that we should be preparing for and responding to in a well-coordinated way.
Coons adds this climate adaptation and resilience strategy isn't all that's needed, but he says there is an appetite for it, and the bill has bipartisan support. He points out that in 2021, climate-driven natural disasters cost $145 billion nationwide. Forbes Tompkins is with the Pew Charitable Trust's Flood Prepared Communities Program. He says rising sea levels and storms have led to increased flooding along the entire East Coast, and he outlines some of the key tasks a federal chief resilience officer would be charged with. For instance, they'd take stock of federal barriers to enhancing resilience and then lead the development of a strategy to address them.
Along with identifying opportunities to streamline federal support, lead with science, and put nature to work in ways that help localities, states, and regions better prepare before disasters strike.
This week, Senator Chuck Schumer of New York called on FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, to assist local governments near Lake Ontario with flooding mitigation projects. The Wayne County area, for instance, is still reeling from major high water events in 2017 and 2019. Funding from the bipartisan infrastructure bill is helping, but Schumer says more is needed to fully recover. Support for this reporting was provided by Pew Charitable Trusts. This is Lily Bolke with New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
It's past time to declare independence from assault weapons. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Mass shootings in a dark, dystopian way are as American as apple pie. This was made painfully clear on July 4th in Highland Park, Illinois, when a gunman opened fire on hundreds of people lining the streets for the Chicago suburb's annual Independence Day parade. When the shooting stopped, 6 people lay dead, with close to 30 injured, one of whom later died in the hospital. July 4th honors the day in 1776 when the 13 colonies issued the Declaration of Independence. "We hold these truths to be self-evident," its preamble proclaimed, "that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness," unquote. The Highland Park murder victims have neither life nor liberty, robbed of their happiness as the shooter fired at least 70 rounds into the crowd, using his legally purchased semi-automatic rifle exactly as the AR-15's original designers intended, to kill human beings. The Second Amendment rights of the accused killer, recently expanded by the aggressively right-wing U.S. Supreme Court majority, irrevocably trumped the rights of his victims. 6 months before the Declaration in 1776, a pamphlet tore through the colonies like wildfire. Common Sense, by a working-class English immigrant named Thomas Paine, argued in favor of overthrowing British rule in the 13 colonies. Several hundred thousand copies circulated among the 2.5 million people there, generating a wellspring of support for revolution. Paine cited the battles of Lexington and Concord on April 19, 1775, as the moment that ended the possibility of reconciliation with England. On that day, the mythologized Minutemen, those American farmers who laid down their plows to take up arms, militarily retaliated against British soldiers for the first time, firing what Ralph Waldo Emerson called the shot heard round the world. By December 1776, the Continental Army, commanded by George Washington, was on the run, fleeing a massive British onslaught. Thomas Paine, seeing morale flagging, wrote another pamphlet, The American Crisis. He opened it with the lines, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman." He's credited with providing vital inspiration to the revolutionary cause at its lowest point. A dozen years later, 55 white men, almost half of whom enslaved people, drafted the U.S. Constitution. They included provisions protecting slavery without mentioning it, as well as the Second Amendment, a grammatically ambiguous statement linking a well-regulated militia with the right to bear arms. In recent years, including last month, the Supreme Court has stretched the meaning of the Second Amendment, expanding the rights of individuals to own and carry guns with less and less regulation. This helps explain our current sorry state of affairs with 400 million guns in circulation and 100 deaths from gun violence daily. The current Supreme Court majority fancies themselves originalists, imposing their understanding of what the 18th century founders were thinking. But arms back then were muskets, with each handmade bullet taking about a minute to load, a far cry from today's ubiquitous AR-15. The right to bear arms, like so much in our country's bloody history, can be traced back to the violent institution of slavery, the suppression of slave revolts, and to the genocide against indigenous people.
When you think about the Bill of Rights, how you've got the right to freedom of the press, how you have no state-sponsored religion, how you have freedom of assembly, the right not to be illegally searched and seized, the right to a speedy and fair trial, the right not to have cruel and unusual punishment.
That's Carol Anderson, author of The Second, Race and Guns in a Fatally Unequal America. She was speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
And then you've got this well-regulated militia, the right to bear arms for the security of the state. That amendment is an outlier in this Bill of Rights. And that outlier is because it was the payoff to the South to have a force under state control that could contain Black aspirations, Black freedom quests, that could contain what is seen as a dangerous Black population.
Carol Anderson's book, The Second, should be required reading for any modern self-styled patriot claiming unfettered gun rights. As Thomas Paine wrote in The American Crisis, let it be told to the future world that in the depth of winter, when nothing but hope and virtue could survive, that the city and the country, alarmed at one common danger, came forth to meet and to repulse it, he wrote. Our uniquely American crisis of mass shootings and gun violence must be confronted with sustained grassroots action, starting with an assault weapons ban. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
The reality of affordable housing is changing in New York, and advocates for renters' rights say it's time for an update. For years, affordable housing has been defined by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development as 30% of a person's gross income, including utilities. But the combination of higher prices, recent inflation, and stagnant wages has been eroding this formula. Teresa Watson, housing justice organizer for the nonprofit Push Buffalo, thinks the definition is lacking because it doesn't account for people with different sources of income.
When we're talking about seniors, folks on fixed incomes, or people who get SSI, SSI checks come in at about $900 a month. That means if you're paying $300 in rent, which is almost impossible unless you've managed to like win the Section 8 lottery, you're still supposed to live off of $600.
According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, 963,000 renter households, that's about 28% of renters in New York, are considered extremely low income. The coalition also estimates there's a deficit of more than 615,000 available homes in the state for lower income renters. Watson believes rather than using catch-all solutions such as low income housing tax credits for builders, there should be a national reinvestment in public housing, and that communities should look for more individualized solutions. She feels public housing is truly an affordable housing model, but the system needs a serious overhaul.
The disinvestment has not only made them unsafe and often unsanitary places to live, they haven't been kept up, they haven't been invested in, they've been stigmatized, they've been over-policed. But it is the only housing in our country that actually bases what what somebody pays on what they make.
In particular, Watson says Western New York is seeing an affordability crisis as rents skyrocket. One issue she notes is that existing properties are often owned by out-of-town landlords who base rents on what they can get, not on the condition of the property. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast. And we start off each day looking at the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Gas Buddy website says the lowest price now, it's fallen a little bit, is $4.72 at the Citgo in South Cairo. Then we take a look at the air quality forecast for the area, and it's 36. It's gotten a little better, but still getting close to medium range would be a warning to some folks for the ozone in the air. And the National Weather Service in Albany predicts the solar panels will be well fed the next several days and perhaps all week. Sunday should be sunny with a high of 77 and a light northeast wind spinning local windmills. And clear on Sunday night is the forecast, too, with a low around 56. Monday should also be sunny with a high of 83 and a southwest wind around 6 miles per hour in the afternoon and 6 to 8 miles per hour in the evening, spinning local windmills with a low around 65. Tuesday, there is a 50% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 11 a.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 87 and a low around 65. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
Ocho, seis, uno,
cero. Tune in the Radio Art Hour, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WGXC. A show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, 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 radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Waveform Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Tune in the Radio Art Hour, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello, this is Rob Gellis with This Month in History. On July 1st, 1862, President Abraham Lincoln signed the first income tax bill. Also on this day, the Bureau of Internal Revenue was established by an act of Congress. On July 3rd, 1775, during the American Revolution, George Washington took command of the Continental Army at Cambridge, Massachusetts. On July 4th, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was approved by the Continental Congress. On July 6, 1885, Louis Pasteur gave the first successful anti-rabies inoculation to a boy who had been bitten by an infected dog. On July 10, 1973, the Bahamas gained their independence after 250 years as a British Crown colony. On July 12, 1817, American philosopher Henry David Thoreau was in Concord, Massachusetts. On July 15, 1954, America's first jetliner, the Boeing 707, took off from Renton Field in Renton, Washington, on its maiden flight. On July 19th to the 20th, 1848, a women's rights convention was held at Seneca Falls, New York. Topics discussed included voting rights, property rights, and divorce. The convention marked the beginning of an organized women's rights movement in the United States. On July 23, 1952, Egyptian army officers launched a revolution, changing Egypt from a monarchy to a republic. On July 25, 1909, the world's first international overseas airplane flight was achieved by Louis Biraud in a small monoplane. After asking, "Where's England?" he took off from France and landed in England near Dover, where he was greeted by British police. On July 31, 1790, the U.S. Patent Office first opened its doors. The first U.S. patent was issued to Samuel Hopkins of Vermont for a new method of making pearlash and potash. The patent was signed by George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. You've been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXC 90.7 FM. If you have an event you would like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgxc.org.
You're listening to the three extra web streams available at wavefarm.org/listen or WGXC.org, any WGXC.org page. Click on the Listen button to hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, Zach Poff's Pond Station, or the test site of Acoustic Commons. Live weather you can hear on your radio anytime you want at WGXC.org or wavefarm.org/listen. Hear the hydrophones in the Wave Farm pond in Zach Poff's Pond Station, microphone outside in the woods at Wave Farm in the test site of Acoustic Commons, and hear a live stream of an analog drone synthesizer playing the weather, the changes in precipitation, the changes in sunlight, the changes in wind, and the changes in temperature. At wavefarm.org/listen, you can hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, Zach Poff's Pond Station, and the test site of Acoustic Commons. On any WGXC.org page, click on the Listen button to tune in your weather.
Cold brew with oat milk, please.
Sure. Do you want the small or large?
Small. Small. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Emma Madigan, Wave Farm's 2022 summer intern. Recently, I had the pleasure of meeting with Kim and Shahan Girigosian of Red Star Cafe to learn more about their business in Cairo, New York. In a beautifully renovated space on Main Street, Red Star is offering area residents and visitors alike sweet bakery treats and a wide array of rich caffeinated beverages. Stay tuned to hear about what brought Red Star to Cairo, its owners, and what it offers for the community. Red Star Cafe is located at 526 Main Street in Cairo, New York, and more information is available at redstarcafebakery.com.
So to start, what brings you guys to Cairo and why did you decide to open this cafe?
Well, my father bought the house that we bought 12 years ago in 1968, and I've been coming up here my entire life. And when we started dating, Kimmy started coming up here with me, and she kind of fell in love with it, and we just decided that, you know, once we started having children, after our second kid, we were like, we decided not to buy, you know, get a bigger apartment in the city. We were like, let's just do this up here, and kind of like moved up full time 8 years ago. And then we worked in the film industry, and it was just so many hours, and we were always away from each other. So we decided that we just wanted to do something together, and we had interest in coffee and baking, and so we just were like, let's just do this. Like, let's try it out. We found this cool building, and we like decided to turn it into a coffee shop.
That's good. I mean, that's nice. So what kind of specialty coffees and bakery goods do you offer here?
Good question. We have all of the espresso drinks that you can think of, and we can serve them hot or iced. And then we partnered with Irving Farm for our coffee, so it's just like the best coffee you can imagine. And we serve, our iced coffee is cold brew, so it's really smooth and it's delicious. And then we also partnered with Harney & Sons for our teas. So we have like a chai latte, and we have a ginger turmeric latte. And then we also get our ceremonial matcha from there. That's from them. So we do a really nice matcha latte.
Oh.
And then our baked goods is kind of a mixed bag. We bake a lot of it in-house, and then we outsource some of the things just to make sure that the pastry case is full.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just started taking on